Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another preseason game in the books. Roster starting to take shape this week on Pod Like a Raven. Two preseason games in now, one to go, and I will be honest, I'm kind of starting to feel it. I'm kind of starting to feel NFL football get back into the groove of the Ravens, of those fall Sundays, and I'm excited to talk about what we have had happen this week in terms of preseason, and then some fun roster stuff. I am Antonio Barbera, and I'm joined only by one co-host this week, only Jace Evans. Tim Horsey is out this week, and before I bring Jace on in just a second here, it was just too entertaining. We weren't even sure if Tim was going to be able to watch the Ravens game against the Falcons, and then we found out in the text thread that not only was he watching it, but he was just at the stadium. So that was nice. So had he been here, we would have had some nice at the stadium insight. And then not only that, but yeah, I'm gonna call him out. Tim Horsey bet on this football game after specifically telling everybody not to at the end of the previous episode, because don't gamble on preseason football. I'm just messing around with him because he's not here. I'm fairly certain it was a tiny wager placed because he was at the game to add a little excitement. But yeah, couldn't help myself from getting that in with Tim not with us. But in the meantime, I'll bring in Jace Evans. Jace, how are you doing? I heard as we kind of did the pre-show conversation that you have just an amazing story about how you're getting into swing of things in as we approach football season here. So just come on in and tell us the story, because it's too good.
Yeah, so I'm definitely feeling the football. I have done my first fantasy draft with my younger cousin. He's 15. He starts high school this week, and some of his friends and some, like, my uncle's in the league and some of his other uncles and cousins. I guess, as is the case for 15-year-old boys, you know, it's not a circle I'm keeping up with much outside of the one member of my family. These kids are waking up early, Antonio, and anyone who knows me knows I am not getting up as early. So we did a fantasy draft at the time that worked for everyone, which was 9 a.m. on Saturday. I had a few reservations about it. The fact that preseason games aren't completed yet. That was number one.
It's too early. Too early.
Yeah. I was like, I got Justin Jefferson in my draft, and At eighth overall, kind of surprised. Not upset about it. People not believing in Sam Darnold, a topic I think we'll touch on just a little later. But so, you know, I mixed feelings about the draft. I'm certain one of the guys I picked is going to go down in this final preseason week because that's kind of how it always goes. But yeah, from the timing of the draft to just the timing of it being 9 a.m. on a Saturday when I work at 6 p.m. and am up until at least usually, you know, 3 or 4.
Right. We need to kind of hammer the point here. Jace just skimmed over it. Jace is not a morning human and has not been a morning human for quite a long time. Jace
a long time, yeah.
He's like a noon human, not much less a morning human. So I'm assuming, yeah. Jace, this fantasy draft was done online and not in person.
It was, but I did hop on a FaceTime call with my cousin and you know, some of his cousins on his dad's side. It was, you know, it's entertaining. It was, I laughed a lot and had a good time. And, you know, as I said, I don't know if I like my league. I've never actually won a fantasy league for as much as I watch football and love football. It's just something I've never been especially good at, the fantasy side of things. So we'll see how it goes in the fall. But yeah, it was an entertaining way, an unexpected way, an unexpected start to my Saturday. I did not, well, you know, I think even entering Friday, did not expect I'd be waking up at, you know, 8:30 on a Saturday to do a fantasy draft. That's quite early for me usually. But yeah, no, I'm feeling it. I, you know, drafting all the players, just kind of looking at how ESPN ranks sort of the players, get a sense of, you know, who they think is going to be good. I do think fantasy is valuable in that way, and it is fun that way to kind of get a snapshot of, like, who is good this season or who do people think is good, because I think that's actually even more fascinating because, like, the players who just get love from some of these rankings always interest me, especially at the running back position. But, yeah, did get my juices flowing for football, and then I kind of pretty much rolled exactly into that because then when we probably finished that around, you know, 10:30, I went for a walk and then I was watching, I watched the entirety of this Ravens game. I was locked in. I didn't have to work for it like I did the first one. So I watched this game a lot closer. I don't know than I did the first preseason game. I don't know that I have more takeaways necessarily from the first game to the second, but there was some interesting stuff that happened. So I'm curious to dive in. We texted a little bit throughout the game, but I am curious to hear your takes on things and just where we stand, because I think I have some more concerns in some ways, at least at one key position we'll get to in a sec, and then some other things I think that have me kind of more encouraged. I leave a mixed bag, and I guess at the end I still think the Ravens are going to go about 10-7 or 11-6. But certainly, yeah, this game was kind of an odd watch in many ways.
Yeah, we'll get into the Ravens-Falcons in just a second. I'm going to come back to this fantasy draft. I wish it were in person. I'm glad you did. You did some kind of you know, video conference thing. I just kind of, you're too young to be waking up at that time, but you're also not, you're like in the middle age where you're not waking up at that time, whereas the kids are getting up and your uncle is getting up because he probably has kids that are kind of around that age or has
a teacher, so he's going to school himself.
I just want you, like, Anchorman style, like when Ron Burgundy is kind of like lost and just like walking in with like the milk carton, like, that was a bad choice, why are we doing this at 8:45? Yeah, I would have paid the cost of admission to see that.
It did feel a little out of body. Like, my alarm went off, and I'm like, what planet am I on? Like, what? I'm getting online. I'm getting on the ESPN app. Everything felt off.
Okay. All right. Enough of me teasing. Jace, let's get to football. Let's get to the Ravens. 13-12 winner. Barely in a preseason game, basically because the Falcons decided to go for two at the end. Because why have a tie? No interest in that. So the failed two-point conversion leaves the Ravens beating the Falcons by one. We're going to just kind of do the classic reporter's notebook dump style of just kind of running through a couple of things that we liked, things that we didn't like, concerns that we still have, and some just random topics from this game. Very little having to do with statistics and points and important things relating to this actual game and the result. However, It's now two games that we've had of this offensive line and all these questions about who's going to start, who's going to play, what are they going to do. This game was not a good showing, in my opinion, of what this offensive line is going to look like, what it's going to do. The pass protection, not great. You've all seen the Voorhees clip just getting burned early for a bad sack where it was almost like your guard should never be whiffing entirely on a defensive lineman. The tackles, maybe, if they run around them, that can happen. Shouldn't be happening to a guard, and that does happen. But even on running plays, it was no push on the inside runs. They ran maybe three or four toss plays. Falele, who probably weighs 400 pounds, I think he's listed at 380, probably 400, he cannot get outside quickly enough on the where he has to pull. Like, that just seems like a play that's never going to work if he is your choice for guard. Ben Cleveland, goodness me, we talked about him last week, trying to maybe get some reps in and some experience as a backup center. He has one of the worst snap decisions and executions and mistakes that we've seen probably since the Buffalo Bills postseason nightmare that we've not forgotten about. Jace, the line, you know, I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to freak out. It's preseason, blah, blah, blah. This is not the five that have been practicing together, even that aspect of it, right? Like, if you're a one, you've been practicing with Ronnie Stanley, in theory, every day, and then all of a sudden now you're with other guys that you're not used to playing with in a game. But with all that being said, it has not been reassuring. Reassure me, please, or tell me to go help them find another player that can fill in here.
Yeah, I don't know if I can reassure you necessarily. This was obviously for me. I kind of alluded to it. This, I think, officially hit at least an area of marginal concern, because you mentioned especially the running game. Like, I don't know, as bad as that Voorhees whiff was and the Cleveland play, and Cleveland almost sailed another snap. I think it was Josh Johnson snared one, saved it from being a bad snap when they were down near the goal line at some point. But, like, as bad as those two plays were, it just was like the running game being non-existent was a concern for me, for a team that likes to run. And you mentioned, like, obviously their two best linemen aren't in there. But at least two guys who we figure have kind of locked down the starting jobs, or at least so it seems for sure, in Voorhees and Rosengarten at this point. They were in the starting along with Falele, who might be the starting right guard. Who knows? I mean, they had 30 carries in this game for 71 yards. And that includes a few QB scrambles. And that's still 2.4 yards per run. And that actually went up from where it was. At one point in the first half, after they scored the touchdown that made it 7-3, they were averaging 1.8 yards on the ground. And it just felt like in the big moments, the Falcons were just like stacking them up and yielding either no yards with a run or negative yards even. And with the caveats, like we said, their two best linemen aren't in there. And their two best running backs aren't in there and their quarterback, who can seemingly get, you know, 8 rushing yards whenever he absolutely needs to, he's not in there either. But it's still not like reassuring that you're kind of getting bullied by the Falcons' second string. And it's not like the Falcons' first string is like the greatest D-line in the world or anything. It wasn't a great sign to me. And we should say, I think, just here, that on top of all the new players they're working in, they suddenly find themselves with a new coach, too, at the position. It was revealed this week that Joe D'Alessandris, who's been their offensive line coach, you know, for several years now, he was hospitalized last weekend for what they called a quote-unquote acute illness, which will require ongoing treatment for an extended period of time. And so they've named this guy George Warhop, who was previously with the Texans in 2022, was his last job. So he wasn't with the team last year, which always kind of concerns you a little bit, I guess. But they bring him in, and he's basically the new offensive line coach. So on top of, you know, all the having to solidify it, just the spots and stuff. Now they have a whole new, like a new guy just kind of thrust into this process in hard circumstances. Obviously, hope for the best for DL Saunders. It sounded pretty very, very serious the way they worded it, and just the fact that they've hired a new offensive line coach certainly doesn't sound like he'll be back anytime soon. So they have to deal with that now. And for a team that, yeah, like is in this process of finding their five, to have a brand new coach too on top of that, I don't know. It's just a series of concerns. And like you said, you can't take too much out of it. But at the same time, just like for a team that in theory goes out and gets Derrick Henry and wants to run the ball, to run the ball this poorly in the preseason to this point, because they weren't great in the first game either, it's not ideal. It's not what you want. And I know it'll be better once week one comes and they have all the pieces and you know, your number one receiver is Zay Flowers instead of Dayton Wade, and you have Mark Andrews out there and this and that and the other. It'll all improve. But still, not what you want when your backups or starters are dominated by backups, borderline starters for the other team.
Right. If it was five backups, this wouldn't even be going against their whatever second string. This wouldn't be a conversation, but it isn't. several starters likely. Harbaugh was quoted today in the post-practice little presser that he does, and I have some other good quotes from him later. He essentially said that he's like pretty much decided. I don't have the exact quote, but it was like, I kind of like where we're at with the offensive line. I'm pretty set with where we are with that. There's not a lot of change. So he seems to have his five. With him and with this organization, you never really know if the guys that are getting a lot of snaps in preseason, that means that he likes them or doesn't like them. It could mean a lot of different things, but even just in-game, Rod Woodson noted this pretty quickly, that the first drive, the pressure was bad, the pass protection was bad, and then after that, Woodson said, well, now they're just doing like three-step drops, like everything is just quick, get the ball out. That's when you had the three receptions, like on like three straight plays to Anthony Miller. They were all just like quick slants and quick outs. But that's not good. That's bad. That's how they actually end up getting the touchdown. That was the last thing I wanted to add. They get the touchdown because they ran a double move off of all these short passes and short things that they just had. So that worked. But in theory, that's not what you want from your offense, where just one drive in, they have to immediately adjust the entire offensive game plan to just get the ball out, because if Josh Johnson is holding it for more than a few seconds, there's trouble. Turning to Josh Johnson, however, I mentioned him. He was one of my, I think, my top name in terms of who will play in this Falcons preseason game and who needs to step up to make me personally feel better about the backup QB position. And he did. He did it as well as he possibly could, with essentially the quote-unquote the perfect performance in a preseason game.
Yeah, 11 for 11, 120 touchdown. You know, for a guy who's supposed to be a backup, you can't ask for much more. I think, like, what you're saying, like, those short drop, like, he's, what, 37, 38. He's seen a lot. He's a very smart player. It's seemingly the thing that's kind of kept him kicking around this league. And I agree with you. I think for me, he did enough to at least kind of quell my fears. A little like, I think what Tim touched on last week was just like, kind of, if Lamar goes down anyway, it's all kind of a moot point. So, you know, I think to see like just not abject disaster. And frankly, really, the only kind of real negative moment was that sack that wasn't his fault in the slightest. You know, he's not going to escape out of that like Lamar maybe can. So yeah, I was pretty impressed by him, and kind of I thought all the quarterbacks had decent moments sort of in this game. Again, it's preseason, so take it for what you will, but at least I think from what we saw last week to this week, I don't want to say I was on the ledge, but I don't know that we have to go out and get Ryan Tannehill anymore. I think Josh Johnson is fine for what he is. And, you know, sometimes that's going to be the case when it comes to backup quarterbacks. I'm sure they'll try to develop something better. I already saw people on Twitter today, Antonio, talking about bringing Tyler Huntley back. And it's just like, no, we need to find something else. We did the Huntley thing for, what, 2 or 3 years. And it's just like, we need slightly something else. And, you know, again, Josh Johnson at his age is not your long-term backup solution, but he's, I think, a perfectly fine stopgap, and clearly a guy they're comfortable with. We talked about this. This is at least, what, his third time through the Ravens org, so clearly they're familiar and comfortable with him.
And the backup long-term play, in theory, is the guy you drafted this past offseason at a not insignificant pick in terms of draft capital. Other players that offensively took advantage of their opportunities. Talked about Anthony Miller with those three, I think it was back-to-back-to-back plays, if not very, very close to it. Miller with a strong showing. Dayton Wade has the big touchdown that he can kind of demonstrate to teams, as he is a major roster bubble type guy if he doesn't stick with the Ravens. And then the other quarterbacks that we want to touch on a little bit here. Emory Jones, boy, going from one game to the next, he certainly has a better second preseason game than just the one snap that he had in his first preseason game. Devin Leary doesn't play a lot. It's a very strange thing, Jace. I don't understand it. One in, one out, one in, one out here for these, let's call them third and fourth string quarterbacks.
Yeah, I was confused. So I went back through and looked at the timeline just to make sure I had it kind of right in my head, too. And it's, yeah, so Johnson obviously gets the start. And then they go for Leary for the one drive to end the half.
Which was impossible. It was like 20 seconds left in the half. Like, it wasn't even a real possession.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they're not like a real time to see anything. Come out of halftime, Jones is in. And then at that point, you're almost like, did Leary, like, get hurt or something? And what am I missing here? And then even more confusingly, so, you know, you mentioned Jones, nice throw on the touchdown to Dayton Wade, certainly. I feel like that whole play was more Dayton Wade than Jones, but he put the ball where it needed to be. But then, you know, you think at that point, you're like, oh, now it's Leary's turn. Like, Emory Jones got a touchdown, he played a few series. But no, they bring Emory Jones back out for their next series. They go five plays and punt. And then they get the ball back, and then it's Devin Leary time again, just to try to run out the clock with the lead, and then which they don't do. And then, yeah, the next time they get the ball back, they kneel out. So it's Devin Leary gets like two series of like eight plays, basically. It's very confusing. Like, I didn't. The fact that Leary came back, like, at first I was just like, oh, they liked what they saw from Leary last week, and now they just want to see what Emory Jones can do this week. Because, yeah, last week all we saw of Emory Jones was him get strip sacked, and that was the end of the game. So that's what I thought. And then, but to then, like, bring Leary back for one final series, it was just very confusing. And kind of like you mentioned, I feel like, you know, you used a draft pick, what was it, a sixth round pick, right, on Leary. So not like a super high pick, but still, in theory, you draft a quarterback for, I believe, the first time since they had drafted Trace McSorley. It'd been several years since they used an actual draft pick on a quarterback. You figure you are either outright, this guy's going to be your backup quarterback, or at least you're grooming him to be that with, like, you know, the new 3 QB rule on game day, all that stuff for the emergency QB or whatever. And then he just, like, doesn't play. And, like, I thought Emory Jones was fine, but Emory Jones was, like, a six-year college guy. He's an undrafted free agent. He bounced around. He played for three different college teams. Like, he's fine. He has things he does well. He has, you know, large, glaring flaws. Not that Devin Leary doesn't, but it is just strange to me to see him get this kind of run over Leary in this game. And I don't know what that says if they want... if they saw enough from Leary, or they saw nothing from Leary and are like, uh-oh, we need a different QB3. I really don't know what it means. It was kind of very confusing. And I didn't see all that much kind of written or even said about it, to be frank. So I don't know that Harbaugh was asked too much, but it just kind of struck me as sort of odd. And yeah, I don't know what to make of it, really.
The challenge of the backup quarterback. You just get thrown in. You don't know when you're going in. You have to learn to adapt to that. Look, I thought... maybe that they already know who QB1 is, who QB2 is. They know that Leary is, you know, going to be that third elevated quarterback. I thought that it was like, let's just get a half of Emory Jones and then look, NFL, anybody want him? Anybody want a seventh rounder for this guy that can absolutely just throw that great ball to a wide open receiver 20, 30 yards downfield? But then bringing Leary back into the game, I don't... I don't understand. Just let Jones have the half. It was bizarre, to say the least. And a classic Harbaugh move. A very normal Harbaugh-type type thing. I'm going to turn defensively, but anything else offensively, Jay's players or things that you liked or didn't like?
That was about all that kind of really stood out to me. I think we'll kind of touch on him a little bit when we turn our attention to next week. But DeVontae Walker, not involved much. Six plays against the Falcons. And then Harbaugh said he's dealing with a rib injury, which, again, that's a very Harbaugh thing. You're like, well, if he's hurt, why is he playing at all? If he's good to go, why only get six plays? I don't know. That's just like a John Harbaugh, I think, shrug my shoulders. But needless to say, I think of sort of their receivers. Like we've said, Dayton Wade's been their best receiver consistently these first two preseason games. And I've liked, you know, Tylan Wallace had a great catch in this. I feel like he should be having more impact, given he's the only kind of guy I think might actually make the team that is getting run at this receiver position significantly in the preseason. But yeah, that was kind of just reading kind of Zeribik's stock watch. That kind of jumped out to me because, yeah, as I admit, I didn't really notice in the moment because Walker did nothing to make me notice while watching the game. So yeah, that's kind of just, I think, offensively sort of a thing that has stood out to me.
Yeah, I think it's one target, no catches through two games for Walker, which when you're, I mean, he'll stick because he's a fourth-round pick, but if you want to be a receiver or do you want to be a special teamer at that type of draft position, the receivers have to, you got to take advantage of the game time that you're going to get to show that you merit snaps on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, oh boy, Jace. Trenton Simpson, I have seen enough. I have seen enough. He does not need to play in the third preseason game. I don't even know if he needs to practice for the next couple of weeks to just get him nice and fresh for week one. I was not hesitant, but I kind of middled last week with him. I said, you know, the box score looked good, but a lot of the tackles were just like the ball coming to him in the middle of the field kind of things. That was not the case in this game. I thought he was thumping dudes on the interior runs. He was flying to the ball, to the sidelines, tackling extremely well. I think he almost, like, you know, the opposite of decapitated Heinicke. He just, like, almost removed everything but the head from Heinicke on one of those scrambles. He looks ready to play. He looks ready to go. And I am excited about, you know, maybe they were so quiet about the, like, oh, yeah, no, Trenton Simpson, he'll plug and play. He's going to take the queen snaps. He's going to be the starting middle linebacker. And then that was it. Because they knew it the whole time. This is not like a revelation for them. They've seen him do this for months, but it is a confidence boost to see him in these preseason games looking better than everybody else when he's the only one, you know, on the field, basically.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I don't want to see him next week. I agree with you that we've seen enough from him. And like you said, and it was just kind of versatility, too, that kind of jumped out to me. And I think that's what is nice is when you do have a starter playing mostly backups, you want the guy to stand out. And I think he's certainly done that. And like that rush he had on a blitz early in the game when Heinicke was in there, where he like just kind of bulldozed into like two different guys on his way to, you know, he didn't get the sack, but he hit Heinicke and like, you know, Jalen Armour-Davis, who I thought had a good day too, he had a chance to like intercept that pass because of the pressure Simpson put on. And then later in the game, Simpson nearly had a pick of his own. He had a nice pass breakup kind of sort of near the goal line. I don't know if that was like right before a coup field goal attempt. Can't remember if he made it or missed it. That was a recurring sort of thing in this game. But yeah, he just was like a kind of bull in a china shop, I thought, on those blitzes, or at least that one blitz in particular. And yeah, I think a lot of the Patrick Queen similarities, and I'm with you. I think he's proven enough that I don't know that he has to play next week to really, you know, if you're like, especially because they're so thin at the position, if you're like, he's looked good and he's our starter, like, almost by default, like, we don't have other options. So I feel like even if you want him to have the experience, it's just like, if he's the starter, like, keep him healthy, because I think he's shown out and they don't have that many other options right now, frankly, at that middle linebacker position. So yeah, they're going to rely on him, but I think as far as you know, that goes, he's at least shown what you want to see in preseason. So yeah, with Wiggins out this week, I think he was certainly the defensive player that kind of shined by far for me, at least number one on defense. And so yeah, it was nice to see.
Another guy, I don't even want to say it out loud, Jace.
Yeah. It's
big James Prochet energy, let's say. It's David Ojabo. And I don't mean to disparage him, I don't mean to curse him or jinx or whatever, but he looked pretty good in a limited number of plays defensively. And my goodness, what a lift this would be if we had a healthy season from a talented edge rusher that we drafted. David Ojabo, multiple nice rushes, multiple nice, like, edge setting, the Jarrett Johnson special against run plays. You could see the confidence of him as the game went along, as he had a couple of these nice plays and kind of, you know, incisive with his pass rushes. Jace, can we get, I don't know, 13 games of this? Not even 17. Can we get 13 games and 8 sacks and just fill that Jadeveon Clowney stat void just so nicely?
I know. I'm so scared to even kind of set talk, like you said, like talk about how good he was. Like, he, this is a dumb observation, I know, but like, he just so looks the part. Like, they show him, he's healthy and he's back out there, and you're like, huge, broad shoulder, number 90, perfect pass rush number, speed off the edge. And yeah, like you said, just a number of good, like, he didn't get any sacks in this game, right? But he had some really good pressures. And he's a guy, he's made notable impacts. Like, he's forced multiple fumbles and his, like, comes up with sacks.
18 snaps that he's played in the NFL thus far.
But he's played like 5 games, if even that. And it's just like, yeah, it would just be so huge. Because, like, and why I say it's a dumb observation, Odafe Oweh looks the part too. He's huge. He's fast, except when he's 2 feet from the quarterback and, you know, wearing 99, like the ultimate pass rush number. He looks the part too.
I don't know if you heard, Odafe Oweh had a huge practice today. I saw it was all over Twitter, and I'm not kidding. Apparently multiple sacks today in practice. So Odafe Oweh, I'm not even worried about him. But yeah, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, so he looks the part, too. That's very funny and very frustrating for what you said. Like, the whole you can't actually sack the quarterback at these practices part of things. That's this whole issue. I think we were talking about that a few weeks ago. But so Ojabo, for me, he definitely was the guy who popped just to see him out there, finally medically cleared. And then I think it's kind of a similar Simpson thing. It's like, when you do have a lot of backups out there and not really true starters, like, his talent does jump off the screen when he's going against these kind of guys, and that's promising. And so, yeah, I hope he stays healthy. I hope we see it. You know, they draft him, and they know it's going to be a process because he tore his Achilles, right, at Michigan's Pro Day or at the Combine. I forget where it was, but in the draft process. And so, like, a first-round pick, probably guaranteed that they get in the second round and take a chance on him and know he's going to have to rehab. And then his second season's wiped out entirely too. So, like, to just have basically almost a pseudo rookie in year three that had first round talent, if he could stay healthy and produce, that would just be such a huge thing. So yeah, for me in this game, outside of what Trenton Simpson was up to, this was maybe almost even more encouraging because we just haven't seen David Ojabo much. So for him to be cleared and back and make the impact he did, it was encouraging. But like you, I am scared. I am scared to make proclamations. I am scared to get to, you know, put the cart before the horse, etc. I don't want to. I guess it's almost a believe it when I see it in the regular season type of thing, because I think he's shown the talent is there. It's just you gotta stay healthy and play games, and that's just been his biggest thing so far. So I hope it continues. I'm glad he's back. I wouldn't hate him not playing next week just to, you know, keep him healthy. But yeah, it was nice to see him back out there.
David Ojabo, drafted in 2022, played one game played one game week 18, has a strip sack fumble of Joe Burrow in that week. That last week, week 18 game, comes back year two, plays week one against the Houston Texans, has a sack and a forced fumble in that game, plays against the Bengals the week after that, has two tackles, plays four snaps in week three against the Colts, and that is the entirety of his NFL career. Amazing production, given the number of games, the number of snaps. We want to see it. We want to see more of it at a position of need. My goodness. All right, Jace, elsewhere, defensively, what did you like or what did you notice from this game?
So just two other kind of guys on the defensive line to, I think, kind of note. One, I didn't really notice, but he was out there, is Adisa Isaac got back on the field, and that was promising because, you know, the rookie pick, he had not been out there and got, you know, back on the field, got cleared. As I said, didn't actually notice him do anything too much. The time I noticed him the most was when he was hopping off the field with, I believe they said he got some cramps, I believe it was, late in the game. I don't think it was anything too serious, which is good. But then the other guy is Tavius Robinson, who, you know, was a year rookie last year? I believe so. Made the final two-point stop in this game. Nice play to preserve the win for whatever that's worth. But I still think it was a meaningful moment and a meaningful play because, you know, he's a guy who is going to be on the team. He's going to be part of this D-line rotation, I think probably especially on, like, running downs or early downs, not necessarily pass rush downs. But so for a guy who's, like, one of the few guys that, not a starter, but is going to be part of your team playing deep in the fourth quarter, it's kind of what we've been saying about, like, just the level of talent. You're like, going against backups, it's nice to see a guy who you know is on your squad is going to be on the 53 make a big play in what's a big moment in the game, even if obviously it's a preseason game, it doesn't really matter. It's still nice to see. So I found value in that, and he's had a decent training camp. He's you know, some people have been very high on him on Twitter. I think he's one of these guys who kind of, he is what he is, he does what he does, but you need guys like that. So that was kind of just for me, that kind of, you know, game-winning play from him to come up with that. That was nice to see, because he's not a guy we've talked about a lot for who was on the team last year, but he's going to be part of the rotation, especially with Clowney gone, when it comes to rundowns especially.
Okay, looking at special teams, like, I'm going to, one good, one bad, Jace, and one is based in what I saw, and one is based in what I am just guessing. Justin Tucker messed up another kickoff with these new kickoff rules. You know, you guys out there, you say that this is just the Ravens experimenting in the preseason with trying different things out. I say that they will mess something up in a high stakes moment very, very soon, or maybe even later in the season when it's even higher stakes. he tried to do the, so I'm learning these rules too, as you know, I'm in preseason mode too, but last week I talked about, you know, touchback in the end zone, you get the ball at the 30. Touchback in play, you get it at the 20 or something like that. But if the ball, maybe I'm not even right with that, but apparently if the ball on a kickoff bounces in the field of play and then is a touchback in the end zone, you do not get the ball at the 30. You get it back at what I believe is the 20 or the 25. So it seemed like that's what they were working on, is like these line drive squib kicks where you try to get it, you know, into the landing zone, into the splash zone, and then have it continue into the end zone. He kicked it, just went right out of bounds. I got the ball at the 40 instead. So, or no, didn't go far enough or something.
Yeah,
like
I think
that.
He didn't kick it into the, I don't, like, I didn't think make it hit, like, the ground zone. Before right. It got to the landing zone or something right. Like that.
So that's a big no-no. Like, he was frustrated again, so it's good to see, like, angry Tucker in back-to-back preseason games. It's just dumb. I don't like this kickoff just because we're messing it up. And hopefully when it gets to the regular season, everything is fine. But I'm nervous. I'm nervous about it. The thing that I'm going to say positive about special teams, quickly, is not really based in anything that has happened recently, but I went to the YouTube machine, Jace, and I was like, I know nothing about Deonte Hardy. I feel like I've seen, like, one kick return from him when he was on the Bills, and that's it. And who is this guy, and what, you know, are we sure that he's going to be just, like, the locked-in returner? And, Jace, the YouTube machine did not let me down. I didn't really realize that he was Deonte Harris from the Saints, who then changed his last name because he like changed it to like a step parent. I think a stepfather is Hardy. So he like changed it to Hardy. And I was like, oh, I remember Deontay Harris just like running by people on the Saints. That's who this is. And
I did not know that was the same guy.
Got real big random Raven for you, John Brown vibes. Just, I see him taking a slant to the house in a random game. I see good things from him in the return game. He's very, very fast. He's very, very quick. And I'm goodbye Devin Duvernay. I'm feeling better without having seen him, Hardy, that is, in an actual Ravens regular season game. But I'm trying to add a little positive to the special teams there. But yeah, so he will make this team. I think he was like a bubble guy for like 10 seconds there, especially when they added the other receivers, you know, late in.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
In the summer, but I'm feeling optimistic about Deontay Hardy.
No, it's it is always weird, like, because he like was hurt and stuff, so you're like, he was just kind of penciled in, but to actually see him out there and like returning kicks and stuff, you know, they signed him for a reason. A bunch of teams did similar things. The Steelers went out and got Cordarrelle Patterson to be their returner. We went out and got Deontay Hardy. It's going to be a big experiment. I am with you. We are going to mess it up in a pivotal moment. I'm sure it'll be like, we might do it week one, like score a touchdown to go up like 4 against Mahomes and then like don't kick it in the landing zone and Mahomes gets the ball on like the 40 or something. There's going to be some way where we give up like a 65-yard return on after taking a lead. It'll be something like that because that is the Ravens way. I can't say I love the kickoff. It's going to take so much getting used to. I was like, even just rewatching the highlights today, it just looks so weird. And I think until we get it's just like rewiring your brain, because I think like from so much of just watching football over the years, I'm so used to just like the rhythm of what produces generally a, you know, kickoff return touchdown. You see it, you see like the blocks that need to happen, you see the guy hit the hole, and you instantly know when it's gone. But when everyone's lined up 10 yards apart from each other and you're waiting for the catch in the landing zone, and we haven't had I don't think there's actually been, there's been some long returns, but I don't think we've actually had a touchdown off of this kick return. And it like, it has increased the number of total kick returns, obviously, because that's the whole point of it. But if it doesn't produce more touchdowns, it is, I don't know. I don't know how to judge it. It's just going to take me so much time. But that's a long way to say I still don't love it. I still am confused by it. It looks strange. And we are going to mess it up. But I am hopeful in Deontay Hardy being a difference maker, because it is, you know, it's one of those things you don't think about until you have a notable kick returner where you're like, oh, this can change games. Because I feel like there was a number of years there, you know, late Flacco, even early Lamar, kind of before Duvernay's sort of emergence as the kick returner, where you're kind of just like, as long as the guy just literally catches the ball, like fair catches it, we're going to be fine. But if you have someone back there who can actually like produce positive yards, it does change games sometimes. And we saw, you know, last year, Tylan Wallace won a game in overtime off a punt return. So these things do matter in a league that is prioritizing having action on these kickoffs. Having someone who can do something with the ball is going to be nice. So I hope, you know, I hope he makes the team and it continues for sure.
Jason, I'm going to add this note about Deontay Hardy. So, you know, quick peek behind the curtain. Shockingly, I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, and I went to Loyola Blakefield. That was the high school that I went to. Quick blurb here. Deontay Hardy. Hardy led the Archbishop Curly Friars, who was from Baltimore, to the Maryland Interscholastic Athletic Association B Conference Championship and their first undefeated football season in school history, which included a 28-0 shutout victory over traditional MIAA A Conference powerhouse Loyola Blakefield. So I even have that now. Even with that, despite Deontay Hardy crushing my beloved Loyola Blakefield Dons 28-0 in what year was this? 2014. I'm nonetheless excited about him. Coming to Baltimore, coming back to Baltimore.
Yeah, coming home.
Yeah, coming home to dominate special teams. All right, enough of that. Some quick injury updates that I did last week. I'm really doing it this week just because this is where the fun Harbaugh stuff is. Tyler Linderbaum has kind of had this quiet neck injury. He is not practicing. He has obviously not played in any of the preseason games. Harbaugh, Linderbaum is, quote, right on schedule, end quote. Whatever that means, right on schedule to miss the entire season and come back next year, right on schedule to practice tomorrow. You can't just say right on schedule. It means nothing. Just don't say anything in that case. Mark Andrews, who, by the way, got in a car accident last week, apparently by the Ravens, in a statement by the Ravens, sustained no injuries. Neither he nor the other car sustained no injuries, which is great. Mark Andrews has a, quote, very minor thing. He'll be okay, end quote. Hasn't practiced since the car accident. Was he hurt in the car accident or was he not? Is this minor thing from the accident or something from practice? He'll be okay. Is he going to survive or is it he'll be okay? He'll be back at practice tomorrow. It means nothing, Jace. I hate this. John Harbaugh, it's August. He's in, like, playoff form already, not even preseason form.
Yeah, he's the quotes, we've joked about this, but Harbaugh quotes really might have to come back. I don't know if it was just because everything just, you know, despite, there were a few games that drove us insane last year, certainly. At one point, I called for him to be fired, I know, on this program. But they still
last season.
Yeah. They still went 13-4, only had four losses in the regular season. So the vibes were high. The injuries, you know, despite Mark Andrews' injury situation generally okay. But I feel like he's been back to forgive me, I'm back to the old meme, sort of, where, like, because I was reading about in Jeff Zarebik's piece from Saturday just about the line and their kind of concerning performance and if they have the guys and stuff. And basically, I'm kind of paraphrasing because I just don't have the exact quote pulled up, but it was Harbaugh was basically like, what do you think of the line? And he was like, some good, some bad, but you'll never really know until you watch the tape. It's like, thanks, John. Some good, some bad. Perfect response from John Harbaugh. What happened? Some good, some bad. It's like, thanks, coach. That's football, so way to describe it, sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I think I may have teased it either last week or the episode before that, but we will be doing Harbaugh quotes this season because they're irresistibly frustrating. The last injury update, Chris Borg got a concussion, I believe, in the last preseason game, the one prior to the Falcons game. He is back at practice. Good to see, just because the middle linebacker is kind of thin. He's kind of a need there and certainly was signed as a special teams ace. So good to just have that kind of resolved and have him, I would hope, ready to go for week one. I don't want any of these players to play, Jace, but they don't have enough. There's, like, not enough human beings for them to not actually play a football game, which is kind of annoying.
Yeah, so some cut of them down will days, have to play. Cut down day is the 27th, I believe. When they have to get down to 53. So, yeah, that's despite what we said, I do expect to see Trenton Simpson out there. Like you said, it's kind of a thing where, like, especially if Board's still hurt or they're just being, you know, careful with him coming back from a concussion, even if he is back in practice, if they want to hold him out of a game. Yeah, like, if you only have, like, one or two rostered middle linebackers, it's like, one of those guys is going to have to play, even if you hate it, or at the very least, suit up. So, yeah, it's, I mean, I go back and forth on this because, on the one hand, I'm like, I can't believe, like, some of these guys, like, Trenton Simpson's still out there, and, like, Rosengarten, your presumed right tackle's playing into the third quarter, that kind of thing. Sometimes I'm like, how is this happening? But at the same time, at the other side, I'm, you know, it is football. It's a contact sport. People are going to get hurt no matter how careful you are. I don't know if we talked about this on the show. Kyle Hamilton, everyone was worried, had some, may have suffered some major injury, I believe, last Sunday. So we probably did touch on it a little bit. But he's apparently fine. He was like, missed one day of practice, did some solo work, and then was just back on the field this week. So, you know, weird stuff can happen. Obviously, in 2021, they lose Gus Edwards and Marcus Peters for the season on basically back-to-back plays at a practice like 4 days before the season opener. So football is just, when you're pushing your body as hard as these guys do, sometimes there's, you could take all the precautions in the world and you could just, I mean, this Linderbaum thing was just something that presumably happened at practice with his neck injury. So, you know, he hasn't been playing any preseason games and he's hurt. So, yeah, I think it's just a sort of, as much as it annoys me and I kind of, I guess, talk out of both sides of my mouth, I also see, like, it's sometimes there's just nothing you can do to prevent some of these injuries, no matter how careful you are, because it's a very violent sport. You're, you know, not playing golf out there. So,
and then I think a part of it is also just with this, like, information overload. Like, you and I shouldn't get instant tweets from reporters at the stadium or at the facility the second somebody like rolls an ankle, kind of thing. Like, there was something today, Lamar Jackson, like, his ankle was bothering him, so he went in to the facility for 10 minutes and then came back and practiced, was just back at practice. I read that now and I think, oh my gosh, he might have a bad ankle, is he going to be limping, hobbled for week one? No, I wouldn't have noticed it in week one. I wouldn't have had any idea that that had ever happened. But instead, I know it the second that it happens, and everybody talks about it over and over and over again, and you freak out and you analyze. And in the words of John Harbaugh, he'll be okay. You know, right on schedule. Everything will be fine. All right. Now, I want to just a few notes about the NFL as a whole. I'm going to go over a couple of quarterback updates. And Jace, we can go over this as long as you want and as briefly as you would like. Maybe the most interesting to me, the Raiders officially named Gardner Minshew their starter for week one. Barring strange things, that probably means he will be their starter for week two. I say that for a very specific reason. Week two will be the Ravens' home opener. So Gardner Minshew makes another early September appearance at the bank, and I hate it. I think I just don't like that I'm going to see him again. It'll probably be raining again. Would have been fine with O'Connell, like, whatever. I'm not afraid of O'Connell beating the Ravens at the bank. Now we have a guy coming in who literally did that somehow last season with the Colts. I don't like it. So that's all I have to say about that. And then the other ones is just the rookie QB updates. Jaden Daniels named the starter for the Washington Commanders. For our devoted Commanders listeners out there, I wonder if you're happy about this or afraid based on the status of that team, whether you wanted him playing immediately or not, but probably a good thing that he has looked good enough to go for week one. J.J. McCarthy, meanwhile, for the Vikings, suffered a meniscus injury, and he is out for the season. Jace's fantasy football team, we'll see how it reacts to this with Justin Jefferson as their top guy there. And then for the Bears, Caleb Williams. Jace, I'm just seeing too much of it on social media. It's not even that I don't care. I don't care this much. He is already either Patrick Mahomes or he's definitely just Justin Fields 2.0. And it's everywhere. And I don't care. And guess what? We don't know anything yet. Let's just let the games happen. But I'm like already just getting annoyed at him by osmosis, and it's not really his fault.
No.
I don't need to see it all. Let's just watch him play regular season football games, and then I'll get excited about it.
and he's done some things that are exciting, and I understand what's happening here. It's the Chicago Bears are one of the biggest fan bases in the, I mean, Chicago's our third largest city in this country. They're the only football team in America's third biggest city. One of the oldest NFL teams, and a team that has had basically no good quarterback play, you could argue, for 70 or almost 80 years at this point, since the days of Sid Luckman in the 1940s. But if you wanted to be more charitable, you could say, since Jim McMahon was there, which was still 40 years ago. So I understand, why the reaction's over the top. He's done some fun things, and this is just a really big and very desperate fan base. This is a fan base, I believe... The stat, right, is the Bears have never had a 4,000-yard passer, and it's very possible Caleb does that this season. he seems like a good dude, and I think there's a few things I like, or I hope that he succeeds. I love that he's in the NFC, and if he is really good, the Ravens will only see him once every 4 years, at least as the schedule is currently constructed, at least guaranteed. It was just a situation I think that was primed to overload, and I am very been hesitant of the Bears bandwagon because I think the team improved dramatically. He's going to be, I think, a step up. And there's also a very real path where their coach is still Matt Eberflus, who has not really proved anything in his first few seasons on the job. And he's a rookie QB. There's a path that things don't work out. The Bears go 8-9 and that's fine. This team went 7-10 last year. It wasn't like they were a disaster or anything, but yeah, the Bears hype is going to be out of control. And if he's any good, you're going to see so much more Bears on the national TV games next year and the years to come, because they're already give you as much Bears as possible on these primetime games. And that's with them being bad the last several years. I'm excited for him, but I do think the hype is a little over the top. But again, I understand why, because it's with a much higher hype prospect, but kind of where I think Ravens fans were, slightly older Ravens fans out there, if you remember back to when Joe Flacco came and people were just over the moon that they had a quarterback who was there for more than a season and was somewhat competent. That's was a big step up for them. And so, Caleb is much more talented than Joe Flacco was. He has to prove it. Joe Flacco, Super Bowl MVP, 15-year veteran.
Yeah, let me know when that happens. Yeah.
So, and as for, just staying in the NFC North, the JJ thing, McCarthy, that's just kind of a bummer. I thought it seemed like they were committed to Darnold starting anyway. And McCarthy kind of seemed like one of the more project-y QBs. I know the fans were very excited about him. It does seem like just sort of a sad, this would happen to the Vikings sort of situation to me. I don't hate Sam Darnold. I've been a Sam Darnold believer, I think, more than a lot of people probably. But and I think they'll be fine, but it just kind of seems like a lost year where, at least this year, you're like, well, if Sam stinks, they can put in McCarthy and then you can hope for the future. And now you're just kind of resigned to hopefully we tread water and are a wild card team, and worst case scenario, we're just a boring 6-11, 7-10 squad with Sam Darnold, probably. That's a tough kind of situation to be in entering the season. I feel for them. As for the Raiders, it's kind of a similar thing. I Minshew's better than O'Connell, but I don't know how you could be real. If you go into the season and you're Gardner Minshew's our starting quarterback, you're not thinking Super Bowl. And, as Ravens fans, we've been spoiled with a quarterback as good as Lamar. I think we have at least had thoughts of Super Bowl as a possibility in our heads pretty much since midway through the 2019 season, when it was oh crap, is he really actually that good? And you kind of entered every season since with a realistic, at least it's possible we could compete for the Super Bowl this season. Obviously it hasn't always worked out, but it's not a possibility when Gardner Minshew's your starting quarterback and you're in the same division as Patrick Mahomes. So, that's the only other thing I wanted to touch on NFL-wise. I don't know if you had any thoughts on it. You brought up Justin Fields. The Steelers quarterback competition, as it were, seems to be...
I love it, Jace.
...getting interesting.
I love that. I can't get enough of. because it's just this battle for the middle. That I'm drinking up, this ferocious battle of who is actually better to lead an 8-9 football, inevitable 8-9, 9-8 football team. That we could talk about for another 20 minutes.
Yeah, Russ looked bad, man. Like, there was at one point he was like a -5 in net yards. Like, he had like 16 yards on 4 completions. He was like averaging 4 yards per completion, and then had been sacked 3 times for -21 yards. So he was sporting a -5, which was like a very Russell Wilson. It was like he was very efficient because he was just eating the ball, I guess, instead of throwing in completions. But it was just checkdowns and sacks. But then, you know, Justin Fields came in and, like, overthrew what would have been the game-winning touchdown by, like, a mile. So he didn't look much better either. So, yeah, I'm with you. I don't know who they're going to put in that position. Tomlin had indicated it was going to be Russ Wilson. I think I can speak for all of us, even, you know, with Tim not being here, because we've talked about it, I think we all think that Justin Fields will be the starting quarterback of the Steelers at some point this season. I do think they'll probably enter the season with Wilson. That's what Tomlin's kind of prone to do. They did that with Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett a few years ago, where everyone wanted Pickett to start and they put Mitch in for like 3 weeks, and then it was like, oh, Mitch Trubisky stinks, it's Kenny Pickett time. I kind of expect a similar Russell Wilson to Justin Fields thing, but I don't know. I'm still confused about what they're doing. They will beat the Ravens at least once. It is what it is. That's been the main other thing from this entire sort of weekend of preseason that certainly got the people talking was just, it got me thinking. It was just the Steelers are in a fascinating place. They still annoy me. They will beat us. But, yeah, they are just in a very weird spot with this quarterback battle that I don't really know it's going to work out for them this season.
The Steelers open the season. Their September is at Atlanta, at Denver, home against the Chargers, and at the Colts. That is a cupcake first 4 games that they will probably annoyingly win a few of those games, but they will run into Baltimore in the second half of the season. And then my last note, just because I see it here on the ESPN page, this is one of the greatest Mad Libs of names I've seen in such a short headline. Imagine reading this 365 days ago from a Pittsburgh Steeler perspective. Bill Cowher tells Pat McAfee why he would start Russell Wilson over Justin Fields. Just go back a year to the day of how different the landscape was. I don't know. Bill Cowher and Pat McAfee chit-chatting is not something that I really would anticipate. So just fantastic stuff about there in Steeler land.
Yeah. Quarterbacks that a year ago were on the Broncos and on the Bears at this time.
When you still had your first-round draft pick quarterback starting games and throwing for like 75 yards per game. Okay. Last thing to go over. The Ravens have a final preseason game. It is this Saturday against the Green Bay Packers. They went all the way from a Saturday noon kickoff to a Saturday 1 p.m. kickoff, which was very weird to me last week. The noon Saturday NFL game was very, very strange. And now this week we deal with it again with a 1 p.m. game instead. This game is insignificant. This game does not matter. They will have even fewer first string and, dare I say, second string players in this game. So my question to you, my sort of big picture question, who on this team, who on this roster, and at what positions can something still be done in this game to matter? To matter for making the roster, to matter for earning, say, the number 2 spot versus the number 3 spot, or the 3 spot versus the 4 spot. I'm going to run through the roster quickly. As you kind of, think about this. Because as per usual with the Baltimore Ravens, not a lot of room on this roster. Not a lot of space to make your mark. 85 to 90% of it is probably set in stone. And there's maybe 2 or 3 spots, I'm not even going to say that are open or up for grabs, but just where there's a tiny bit of room, a tiny bit of movement, between who gets that 7th and 8th roster spot. So QB, we know what it is. Jackson, Johnson, and then we'll see what happens if Leary can stick, if Emory Jones had one good pass enough to stick, but probably not. Running back, it's Derrick Henry, Justice Hill, probably Rasheen Ali, Owen Wright, kind of fighting for running back three. So spoiler alert, that may be one of the spots that is still kind of up for grabs. Wide receiver, Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, Nelson Agholor, Devontae Walker, they will make the team. Deontay Hardy will very, very likely make the team. Then you have some sort of mix. Tylan Wallace, Russell Gage, Anthony Miller, and then you kind of have to go, you know, a step down for those long shot names. Tight end slash fullback, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely, Charlie Kohler, Pat Ricard. Pretty set there. Offensive line, Ronnie Stanley, Andrew Voorhees, Tyler Linderbaum, Daniel Falele, Patrick McCarry, Roger Rosengarten, Josh Jones, they will all make the team. Ben Cleveland, likely to make the team. Boy, I'm going to try it. Malasala Amavelaulu, a.k.a. Sala, will probably make the team. There's some, you know, whispers that he's not guaranteed a spot, but you think he will. Behind them, Nick Samak? I don't know if I've ever actually...
No, we never quite nailed that one down. Yeah, I still haven't heard it
said. Center was a late-round draft pick this past spring. Apparently, another great Harbaugh quote, he looked great. He looked great today in practice. So, you know, he may try to hang on to one of those last offensive line spots, especially depending on if they stick with nine guys or if they expand that out to 10 guys. D-line, Justin Madubuike, Michael Pierce, Travis Jones, Broderick Washington, Brent Urban. But done. They will all make the team, and that is very, very likely the set five. Outside linebacker, Dafayowe, Kyle Van Noy, Malik Harrison, Adisa Isaac, David Ajabo, Tavius Robinson. Those six very likely set pat. Malik Ham is on injured reserve. He has, for a few different years, been one of those bubble guys, but he's out for the season, so... not a factor at this point. Joe Evans, one of my, this undrafted free agent will make the team. I don't think he's going to make the team. He has looked, dare I say, slower than everybody around him on the edge, which is bumming me out because he had crazy production at Iowa as a pass rusher, but I have my doubts about it translating to the NFL. Inside linebacker, Roquan Smith, Trenton Simpson, Chris Board, Josh Ross, those are your four, probably. Cornerback, Marlon Humphrey, Brandon Stevens, Nate Wiggins, Jalen Armour Davis, TJ Tampa, Ardarius Washington, Demarion Williams, and then Arthur Millett on IR maybe does the, the six or the four
game? Yeah, that's like the pup list or whatever.
Something like that. That's pretty much set. Safety, Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Williams, Eddie Jackson, Sanusi Kane. Maybe a bit of room here. Bo Braid has looked good. Daryl Worley, they just love him. He has been a veteran guy for a few years. He might be, you know, bouncing up and down from practice squad to 53-man, so we'll see there. And then the specialists, Justin Tucker, Jordan Stout, and the return of long snapper Nick Moore. Just that, like 50 of those 53 names are just going to be there. So where are the three spots that maybe a guy can move here, maybe a guy can move there? You know, we never can predict the Brent Urban style roster magic that the Ravens tend to do right. Every year where they, you know, like release a guy so that they can have a roster spot and then they eventually re-sign him 24 hours later. That's difficult to predict. However, what's the room? You know, what's left here? What are the marginal moves that the team can make? And what can these certain players do in a meaningless third preseason game to show that they belong?
Yeah, I think you just have to kind of prove, like, you know, it's on the trust factor. Like, if your name is called upon, can you perform in an NFL kind of game setting? And to your point, I think that might be why maybe a guy like Salah is on potentially the chopping block. I do think when it comes down to it, it's kind of those positions you take a lot of that kind of end up, shaking out and being like the kind of just whatever combo they go with kind of determines who sort of draws the short straw. So for me, I always kind of look at the DB situation, because you need a lot of those, the offensive linemen, and I think it kind of draws from sort of really those kind of two pools. And I do think it's kind of like, you know, if they maybe, if they haven't seen enough from like a Sanusi Kane, maybe he gets a cut or, you know, the practice squad route. And they've been a lot more willing to do that of late. I believe Zariba keeps bringing up a stat. It's like two of the last three fifth round picks they've made, they've cut before the season started. Like Caillou, Blue Kelly, if you remember him, and Sean Wade showed the door. So they're not afraid, especially it seems like defensive backs. So like, you know, there's guys like Ardarius Washington they've loved for years who may or may not make the team. I feel like he'd probably have an advantage over a guy like Sanusi Kane, certainly. It's as you mentioned, it gets complicated further by, like, if guy is hurt, like, they can't technically cut him sort of thing. So then that's when the shenanigans you mentioned come into effect where, like, maybe they put, like, you know, if Kane's still out with, like, the stinger he suffered, they put him on IR and they take Washington or re-sign him or whatever. All those gymnastics. But I do think it kind of comes down to a guy like your Salas, like, your Sanusi Kanes and Damarian Williams, you know, Pepe Williams. I think we like the name, but I think it's clear a guy like Jalen Arbor Davis, at least to me, has kind of shown a little more throughout his career. They seem to trust him a little more when he is healthy to actually, you know, play defensive back and that kind of thing. So I think it kind of comes down to guys like that. Like you said, the up front, I think, is almost set in stone on the defensive line anyway. I mean, that the literal just defensive linemen, quote unquote, the exact same group from last year. It's very rare they sort of have this kind of year-to-year continuity, but it is kind of nice to just be like, this is the group and it's the same group as last year, and you don't really have to think about it too much. So I do think that it's the back end and it's the linemen, and that's, I guess, the one good thing about the preseason is that you know, those are the positions, A, you have the most defensive backs on the field. You have five linemen at all times on offense. So you kind of do get a run, and I think you at least get a sense of, you know, who has an inside track. I doubt someone like Ben Cleveland is going to not make the team. You know, he's a guy I think we focused on a lot. He doesn't seem to be in the mix exactly with the guard competition, but the fact that they're having him basically be their backup center seems like he's probably safe. And so then you focus on a guy like Nick Samak, where you're like, or Samak, I don't know. We'll figure out how to say his name, maybe, if he makes the team. But, you know, the fact that they draft a guy who was a center in college with a seventh-round pick, right? But he's not the backup center, seemingly, to start, you know, preseason. That doesn't seem to bode exactly well for maybe, you know, him having a spot on the 53. Again, he might end up a practice squad guy too. So it's just kind of guys like that. Those are the kind of two positions I make a focus on. You mentioned, we talked about throughout the show, the linebackers, you just don't have that many of them, middle linebackers especially. So I think that group's set. The receivers, that's like the third group. And I do think it comes down to if it comes back to Tylan Wallace and them loving his special teams versus, you know, or they prioritize Hardy, or maybe they surprise and they say, you know what, Walker, even though he's a fourth round pick, he's shown us nothing, so he's going practice squad maybe. It's going to be, I think, and it's all going to come down to the mix. They've taken 10 offensive linemen in the past. They take a ton of DBs because there's constantly DB injury. I mean, we've already seen DB injuries. Arthur Millett's going to miss the start of the season. So if I had to guess, it might be one of those receivers or two. Maybe that might be where the surprise is. But it's going to be one of those three groups where I think the guys get cut. And more likely, it's going to be the receivers because you can't have too many D-backs, as the Ravens have proven. And they love linemen. They've taken 10 multiple times. So I kind of do think maybe it's one of those receivers kind of just doesn't end up making it in the end.
All right, my last question for you here before we wrap up. Offensive line. Assuming that the starters day one are Stanley, Voorhees, Linderbaum, who are you putting right now at right guard, right tackle, between McCary, Falele, Rosengarten, Josh Jones, Ben Cleveland, if you want to? How are you slotting it in? I'll go first if you'd like to give me a second.
I'm curious what you're thinking.
I thought about this long and hard. I'm not into Filele at guard. I think I've been pretty clear about that. I'd probably just put Makari there, put the veteran at right guard. He knows how to play it, and it's not center, so I'm not constantly thinking that he's going to have a bad snap. And then Rosengarten at right tackle, and you roll with that. And then you have Filele, who in theory should be able to play both guard and tackle on the right side as a reserve if either of them are banged up or needed, you know, need to take a series off. That's where I would put it right now. I'm curious about your take.
Maybe I'm dumb. I feel like I still circle back to Cleveland at the right guard spot. Just, he seemed, you know, he's played there a few times over the last few years, and he generally always gets solid reviews. I think there's just something about his practice habits that don't sit well with John Harbaugh, something about his approach to the game. But when he plays fine, and I don't think he's the permanent solution at right guard. I don't think they're certainly re-signing him, but there's some reason they brought him back, and I doubt it was exclusively because they think, hey, maybe he can be the backup center. So, you know, I'm with you. Filele is just too big, I think, to be the right guard. And they seem to love Makari as a tackle more than a inside guy for whatever reason, but... And as not a starter, too, with Makari. I never quite figured out that the Patrick Makari thing fully. But, yeah, I think I'd probably just start with Cleveland just because you've seen him in that spot the most. He's been there the longest. And I weirdly, as much as I'm like, he's generally caused questions, I feel like I have the least amount of questions kind of about him in the end, where I'm like, I kind of know what I'm getting with Ben Cleveland, which is just like, he's fine. Like, he doesn't stand out, but I've never, he's not never gone to the Pro Bowl or anything, but he seems far from disastrous every time he's in there. So even if the coaches don't trust him, I still think he's probably, you know, he played guard in college. He's it's a position he's familiar with. He's played it the most. He's probably your most natural right guard on the roster, at least in terms of, you know, what he played coming through school and into the NFL. So I think I go with him, but yeah, it'll be interesting for sure. I mean, I think he makes the team regardless, but I truly don't know what we'll see. And we should, I guess, just mention they are doing the whole joint practice thing with the Packers in the lead up to this game. So, you know, it's our turn to get in on all the training camp fights that happen at these joint practices and stuff. So that'll be some entertaining, I think, late week, you know, when Roquan Smith lays out some guy like a Packers running back and a bunch of linemen start pushing and shoving or something, that'll be just something fun to watch out for. But it is kind of remarkable. You know, I feel like this goes for every NFL team, but like you invest so much time into all these undrafted free agents and picks and stuff, and then the roster cutdown comes, and like you kind of said, it's really, you're talking about like three or four guys for three spots at the end of the day. It's your team pretty much is your team at this point in the season. As much as I know we've gone into the year and brought in guys like Jason Pierre-Paul and all, just running backs off the street and all kinds, Melvin Gordon's on the team, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, your team's pretty much your team by the time you break training camp. So, yeah, there's... Not, I think it's not going to be too much surprise. It's going to be just what running back, or what, I guess kind of what running back a little bit with Rasheen Ali, but more so what receiver they take, what as their final one, what lineman makes the cut, and then how many DBs they take. So, yeah, it'll be something to look out for. I'm bad at math, so it won't have happened right our next show. It's the following show.
I was about to say, the roster has to be down to 53. By 4 p.m. on Tuesday, August 27th, our episodes obviously normally come out Tuesday morning, and we record on Monday. We will have to have maybe some backroom conversations about bumping a day in order to be talking. You know, we can either be guessing the stuff as almost as it's coming out, or we can have the episode come out after the final decisions are made. Of course, you have to be down to 53 by that time. They are not going to do it all at 3:30 on the 27th, right? We will hear names start to trickle out probably even as early as Sunday, as early as the weekend, and then that'll continue on. So, yeah, we'll have some talks about that, and you know, when you see us, you see us. But nonetheless, we'll be back to talk about the Packers game and whatever else has happened roster wise as we inch closer and closer to, oh my goodness, the NFL regular season opener on Thursday, September 5th. Against the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay, for Jace Evans and Antonio, I am Antonio Barbera. For Tim Horsey, too, you know, why not? I am Antonio Barbera. Thank you for listening to us here on Pod Like a Raven. We will see you at some point next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.